call the Energy, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Clerk will take the roll. I believe we have a quorum present. And the first order of business would be the approval of minutes, if we have minutes. I can tell by the smile on your face, Representative Johnson, that you have read the minutes, and Representative Johnson moves approval of the minutes from January 17th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
As opposed? Minutes are approved. And what we have on the agenda for today, members, is sort of an overview of the activity and budget proposal for the Department of Commerce, whose fiscal accounts we have in the finance part of this committee. Without further ado, we'll leave it to the department to present in the order that works best for them. And if you would please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dennis Munkwitz from the Department of Commerce, and I'm the CFO. With me is Tim Janke, who's the finance director. Unfortunately, Commissioner Wilson wasn't able to be with us today, but he sends his greetings, and we will walk through our budget overview of the department. You'll find that we're a quite diverse agency. We have a lot of different programs at the department. We'll spend some time walking through some of the numbers related to those programs, and then we'll focus the discussion on the governor's change items that were released this morning in his budget. And at that point, I'll ask each of our three deputy commissioners to come forward and walk through their change items in those areas. I believe that there'll be a fair amount of interest in the energy-related initiatives there, and we'll take those up last and spend, I would expect, the majority of our time discussing those items. So without further ado, we'll start. I think everybody has a handout of our presentation, if you want to follow along with me with that. First page is just talks about our mission. Like I said, we're pretty diverse. We do a lot of different things. We regulate over 20 different industries. We investigate and resolve consumer complaints. We advocate on the public's behalf in front of the Public Utilities Commission. And we administer various state programs, including unclaimed property, the Petro Fund, and weights and measures. The next slide is a breakdown of the FTE count of our department. We have about 313 employees. Those are broken down and show on the pie chart there. The majority of those employees work in the Market Assurance Division or the Financial Exams or the Energy and Telecom Division. And we'll talk through those numbers a little bit more later on in the show. As I said, we have 313 FTEs. That's our base FTE count. We're projecting that for fiscal year 8, we'll rise that by 10 FTEs with a couple of the change items that we'll discuss later. We'll be adding some positions in Market Assurance and in...
What's the Market Assurance and Financial
Exam, sorry. If we move to then expenditure by program, as I said, you'll notice that we have several different programs. A lot of them seem unrelated, and in fact that they are, but we do a lot of regulation in the insurance industry, real estate industry, energy and telecom. Those are all reflected here. As you can see, energy and telecommunications is a vast majority of our total expenditures are about $334 million, and of that, $230 million is spent in energy and telecom. Now, the majority of that money is spent on the state's Low-Income Heating and Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, and the State's Weatherization Program that also is a program that helps lower-income folks with other energy-related needs that they may have. Otherwise, you'll see that we're pretty much, the petrol fund is another big spender. We'll talk a little bit more about each one of these in detail here as we move along. We have several funding sources. The majority, as the next pie chart reflects, is from the federal fund, where we get the money to operate the LIHEAP and weatherization programs. Next is the general fund. We get almost $54 million biennially for general fund operations. Petrol fund at 32. Special revenue fund of $54 million. That's for the weights and measures program, our fraud unit, and the auto theft prevention program, as well as the Telephone Access Minnesota program. And we'll talk about those in some more detail in a minute. Okay, the next slide, you need to pay particular attention to the revenue that the agency takes in. As you can see, for the next biennium, we're projecting to take in $462 million. Some of the breakdown is listed here. You can see almost half of that will be general fund revenue. From the big categories there are unclaimed property program will take in about $98 million. Securities registration, $68 million. Licensing, almost $21 million. And all other sources of revenue total almost $26 million. On the non-general fund side, you'll see, again, that a large portion of the non-general fund comes from the FET, $192 million. Again, that's for the LIHEAP and the weatherization programs. Special revenue is revenue sources for TAM and the auto theft prevention, as well as the fraud unit. Moving on then to the agency revenue versus expenditures.
Excuse me just a moment. Representative Magnus has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about the petrol fund. And does that blink on and blink off, or do you keep a minimum amount in there? How do you run by that? What's the minimum amount you need to keep in there?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm not sure what the minimum amount is, but if when it gets to a certain level, when it gets to 4 million or below, Mr. Soderbergh is helping me out, it will blink on, and it's a 4 cent per gallon that blinks on for a period of 4 months, I believe, and then it will turn off, and then once it gets to the $4 million level, it will blink back on.
2 cents, I think it is.
2 cents? Okay, 2 cents.
Okay. That's my understanding.
Is it 2 cents for a 4 month period?
Thank you.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you.
Another question, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Hilty. And to the testifier, I'm just wondering, can you kind of give me an idea of what $98 million worth of unclaimed property would be?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Welty. Unclaimed property, I'm not sure what folks know about that, but the state operates a fairly significant unclaimed property program. The department is charged with collecting past paychecks, lost securities, abandoned bank accounts. Recently, in the last few years, we've collected several million dollars worth of insurance policies that were lost or dividends paid on insurance policies. Companies are required to turn that over to the state after they've lost contact with the person for 3 years. So historically, we've taken in probably $45 to $55 million a year, but in the last 2 or 3 years, we've had tremendous growth in the program based on several large insurance companies going through a demutualization process where they moved from a privately held company, you know, the policyholders owned the company basically, to a publicly traded company. And when they did that, every policy owner was entitled to some shares in the company and some dividends, and several people could not be found. So we've got probably a total of $100 million over the last 3 years in as a result of the demutualization. So that's been a big influx of cash. We expect during this upcoming biennium to kind of get back to historical rates of what our collections will be. So that's kind of what the $98 million is all about.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another question about that, about the agency revenue chart on page 4. My understanding, I just want to make sure that I'm reading this right, of the $462 million of revenue for 08-09, only $26 million is coming from the, essentially coming from the state general fund, sort of drawing down the general fund of collection that's not made by the department. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Which chart, Mr.
Chair? The agency revenue chart at the top of page 4. And then the 4 line items, the breakdown of general fund revenue.
Yep.
Unclaimed property, securities, registration, licensing, and then all others. So the, it's essentially $26 million out of the $462 million budget for the biennium that's coming from broader revenue sources.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, I think
great.
That would be correct. Yes. All of this revenue goes directly to the general fund. These are the three biggies, and then everything else combined totals the $26 million.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay. I think that I'm on agency revenue expenditures. Okay.
One moment. I think Representative Saylor had a question as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had kind of a follow-up to Representative Welty's, and that was just with regard to the unclaimed property. Is aging demographics, the population, also a factor in that as we have more and more people aging, where there are more securities and things lost? Is that part of the equation or not?
Mr. Chair and Representative, absolutely, especially when I talked about those demutualizations. When this whole discussion came up with demutualizations, a lot of the insurance companies told us these people are dead. They're not around anymore. Their heirs are going to come forward and claim these things. But lo and behold, we have a lot of folks are still alive. A lot of these folks never knew that their parents had taken out these policies on them as a child. And so you're absolutely right. A lot, I would guess that 60 to 70% of our claimants are senior citizens.
And I think we have one more question, Representative Westrom.
So, Mr. Chair, on that unclaimed properties issue, what does happen to that? Do you have auctions? Do you sell it? Do you just cash it in and the state keeps it? I suppose securities is a little different than vehicles or tangible items. Does it run the whole gamut? What does happen to it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, obviously the majority of it comes in as cash, and that goes directly into the general fund. We do get securities in as well, and what we do with securities is we have a one-year holding period that we must retain that security for 1 year in hopes that somebody will come forward and lay claim to that. If they do that during that one-year period, we'll get a stock certificate issued in their name. After, like, at 13 months, we have directed our custodian to sell off those securities, and then the proceeds from those sales go into the general fund. When somebody comes forward making claim to those securities, we pay them whatever rate we received when we sold those. Safe deposit box contents come in also. If there's tangible items in there, we will auction those off. The department is charged to have an auction, public auction, every 10 years. We last had one probably about 4 years ago. We can't wait 10 years because we're getting in so much more property than we have in the past that we're running out of room. So, yes, we do public auctions on safe deposit box contents. But Representative Westrom, the goal, you mentioned vehicles. We don't get anything like a vehicle or, let's say, a home Those are treated differently, and I'm not sure exactly where in state law that's dealt with, but it's outside of the unclaimed property program that we operate.
Representative Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to zoom back out to the big picture, I'm just trying to make sense of, as we're making, we're going to need to really seriously fund the programs and the renewable energy investment that the governor's called for, that members of this committee are calling for. Am I correct in seeing that the revenue coming in is about $462 million and the expenditure by fund is roughly $335 million?
Yes.
So there's $100+ million that the department essentially is depositing into the general fund for other departments to use.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's correct.
Mr. Memphis, yes.
We are a money maker.
You hit it, Representative Kim. Yes.
Thank you.
Good questions. Moving on then to the agency revenue and expenditure slide. This kind of talks about or reflects what we've been talking about. You can see for the upcoming biennium, we expect to collect in revenue about $213 million in the general fund. Of that, we will get back appropriated, if you pass the governor's budget, about $51 million, so about 25%. And that's high for us. If this was a normal year and we didn't have these energy items that we're going to talk about later, that would be more like 18% or even lower than that. So as you can see, we bring in significant amounts of money to the general fund and we get a small portion of it back. We also, our department has the ability to assess out several of our costs. For instance, the financial exams division assesses out at the rate of 103% of their costs on business. As does our energy programs, we do an assessment against energy utility and telecom providers, and we recover about 97% of our costs there. So we're a good bargain for the state. You know. So back to the slide there. I talked about the general fund. You can see that all the other funds are reflected there as well. If you were to match them one for one, you'd see that the expenditures are probably a little bit higher on the all other funds than the revenue, and that's because there's always timing differences between the state fiscal year and the federal fiscal year. Because we get so much of our revenue for the LIHEAP program and weatherization from the feds, there's always a kind of a three-month lag because of the different years, so that's what would account for that there. Moving on to our specific divisions then on programs, we'll first talk about the financial exams division, and again, we've talked about they license and maintain the financial solvency of state banks, credit unions, finance companies, and insurance companies. If we move to the next slide, you'll see a kind of a breakdown. There's two units within this division, an insurance division, which accounts for about 55% of their budget, and a bank and credit unions unit that's the other 45. Total of $19.5 million for the biennium. The next slide shows a breakdown of how they're funded or how the money is spent. General fund is about $13 million, and special revenue fund is about $7 million. And their FTEs are about 70 projected for 2008 and 70 for 2009 as well. The Petrol Fund is a program that a lot of folks may not be familiar with. It was designed back in 1987 as a way to reimburse petroleum storage tank owners for the cost of the cleanup, to reduce public health risks associated with leaks, and to remediate public leaks in a cost-effective manner. The program, obviously, it would deal with if there's an abandoned gas station and there was underground gas tanks. We would help with the cost of the cleanup and the removal of those tanks. To date, the program has expended about $380 million. We've reimbursed a little over $12 million last fiscal year. and about 13,000 eligible applicants have benefited from the program since its inception. The PECR fund is funded from a dedicated source. There's a petroleum inspection or petroleum tank cleanup fund, special fund, and the program's 100% funded out of that for about $32 million a year. Operating expenses for the program account for about 7% of their budget, and the remaining 93% is paid out in claims. There's an open appropriation from the fund to cover the cost of the total, all the claims made and approved by the program. The next page just shows the funding breakdown. This one's pretty straightforward. It's, like I said, it's all from the petroleum tank cleanup fund. Moving on to administration then, we have six different areas within the administration department, the commissioner's office, the IS area, HR, fiscal, communications, and then the unclaimed property program is operated as part of the admin division. The next page kind of breaks down some expenditures and FTEs by activity. Admin accounts for about $4.2 million, and the IS and unclaimed property accounts for $1.1 million. We have about nine IT staff. We have just over five unclaimed property staff, and all other areas of admin account for about 35 FTEs. We have about 13 people in our fiscal shop, three in HR. Commissioner's office has about nine. And then we also have a unit that's part of admin that works directly with utilities in Minnesota. There's an incredible amount of filings that take place by utility companies operating in the state that requires massive amounts of paper coming in. We've recently moved to taking in more of those documents electronically. But we have about 10 folks that are in that shop as well. I'll move on then to market assurance. Program purpose there is to maintain public confidence in the financial services sector. We've talked about insurance, real estate, securities, franchising there. Their expenditures equate to about $21 million for the biennium. Big things there, the insurance fraud unit, that was a unit that was just created about 3 years ago, I think, in statute. The insurance industry was interested in the state getting involved in cracking down on some of the fraud that they saw taking place in the industry. So a unit was created. It's been up and running for about 2 years, and many of you may have read articles in the paper within the last 6 months or so. There's been some major cases, major actions going on there. So that's the insurance fraud unit. That is funded of special revenue by a assessment against the insurance industry. They supported it. It was their idea. So that's how that's funded. The auto theft prevention program is something that resided for many years at the Department of Public Safety. About 2 years ago, legislation was passed to transfer that function to the Department of Commerce. We've been acting in an interagency agreement with public safety that that program will be physically moving to our department come July 1, and they'll have two employees that will come along with that. It's really a grants program to try to reduce the rate of auto theft in Minnesota. This is funded by a 50-cent surcharge on each insurance policy in the state. Investigations accounts for about a third of Market Assurance's budget. Those would be any investigations related to the industries that we regulate. Could be real estate, insurance, securities, broker, etc. Registration and analysis, that's about $4 million. That, again, is like a securities registration. We do about $34 million. We expect each fiscal year we'll collect $34 million in securities-related registrations in the department. Licensing is about $1.8 million budget. We license over 20 industries. We have 244,000 professionals that we license on an annual basis. So a lot of activity there. The next page,
Marcus, how many FTEs are involved in licensing?
I believe it is about 10. Nine.
Thank you.
Market assurance, expenditures by fund. Funding comes from three sources, general fund, the special revenue fund, that's where I mentioned the insurance fraud unit as well as the auto theft prevention is funded out of the special revenue fund. And then we do have an appropriation from the workers' comp fund as well, and that is to, again, enforce or to carry on activity related to workers' comp fraud that's taking place. That unit was originally housed at the Department of Labor and Industry, and I believe it was probably 4 years ago that was transferred to the department's kind of in anticipation working side by side with this insurance fraud unit that was created about the same time. And they have about 89 FTEs in that division. Moving on then to the Energy and Telecommunications Division, their purpose obviously is to ensure that all Minnesotans have access to reliable and reasonably priced energy and telecom services. They do that by overseeing the state's electricity, natural gas, and telephone providers, as I mentioned earlier, representing the citizens at the PUC, and they promote reliable, low-cost, and environmentally superior energy systems and conservation. Mm. Their budget, as I've talked about, is about $230 million. Again, the majority of that is federal funds for the LIHEAP program in the State Energy Office. The rest is spent in the telecommunications area and the energy planning and advocacy area as well. These numbers...
A second, I think Representative Beard had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To this point, sir, on this slide it says that you represent the public before the Public Utilities Commission. Last week, one day, we had the Attorney General's team here, and they claimed that they represented the public before the Public Utilities Commission. Is there a different nuance or flavor here, or are you both pretty much doing the same thing, or how does this work?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm not sure that I can answer that for you, but Edward Garvey certainly could, and I know he's in the audience here, so we may want to ask him to take that one on. Do you want him to answer it now, or do you want him to take it
up? Mr. Garvey will be coming down in
he'll
a few moments.
Down.
We could wait till he gets here, and then I'll renew the question.
He will, and we'll make sure that he answers that, although... Representative Beard, Mr. Garvey told me that we should give Mr. Monkwitz all the hard questions.
All right.
All right, moving on then, Mr. Chair. The energy and telecom expenditures are reflected, or did I already? I got that one already. Expenditures by fund. General fund, you'll see for fiscal year 8, it's almost $16 million and that is an increase of $12 million in 08. It's going to be it's a change item that Edward Garvey will talk about. It will be a one-time increase of $12 million. That's why you don't see it reflected in fiscal year 9. Special revenue fund is about $9 million in that division, and the federal fund is obviously the big chunk again for the LIHEAP and weatherization programs. And there's about 69 FTEs in that division. Okay, then moving on to the Telecom Access Minnesota program. This is a program that operates in the Energy and Telecom Division. The purpose is to provide telecommunications access to folks in Minnesota that may be deaf or hard of hearing, and recently it's kind of been expanded a little bit to help out folks that are visually impaired as well. We do it by providing specialized equipment and a relay service and outreach efforts to citizens in the state. We move on to the next slide. There's several programs or several functions within the TAM program that take up a chunk of that funding. It's almost $14 million for the biennium. The relay service accounts for about 55% of their budget, and that's the service that is provided by, like, a telecom provider to ensure that the connection is there for TTY or TTD folks having the ability to communicate over the phone lines effectively. The telephone equipment distribution is about 30% of their budget. This is a program that's run through an interagency agreement with the Department of Human Services. This part of it actually provides equipment that's needed to carry on these functions at a person's household. So that's the next biggest part of their budget. And then the smaller pieces are admin, which the program has like 1.2 staff assigned to it, so the salary costs are pretty insignificant there, but the majority of the money spent there in the administration is for outreach. There's brochures, pamphlets, things on TV directing folks to take advantage of the program. So that's what the majority of the money is spent there. And then there's also some new things that have been added just in the last fiscal year or so. The rural captioning, that's to help rural TV stations provide some captioning for some of their news shows. This is something, like I said, it's just fairly recent. I think last fiscal year was the first time it existed. So they're kind of like grant funds to the smaller TV stations that just can't do it on their own. So we're providing some assistance for them to come up with some of that captioning in outstate Minnesota. The accessible news is something that the Department of Economic and Employment Development is involved with. This gives folks that are visually impaired the ability to, using a telephone, to call a service that will read national or local newspaper stories to them that they're interested in hearing. So again, that's something fairly new that we've been working on. And then finally, there's the Minnesota Commission for Deaf and Hard of Hearing, something that was established in fiscal year 7, something that it's a new commission that resides at DHS, but their funding comes from this source here. This program is funded by a surcharge on every phone line in Minnesota. It's currently at 3 cents per landline or wireless line. There'll be one of the many taxes and charges on there would be a 3 cents charge for to cover the cost of this program. So it's all special revenue fund, non-general fund again there. Okay, moving on then I think to our last program is Weights and Measures. Again, this is another area that a lot of folks may not know a lot of things about. And again, it just reflects the diversity of the agency. We have so many broad things that we're charged with doing and programs, and this is just yet another one of those. This is the folks that go out to every gas pump in the state. They go to every grocery store in the state that has scales, and they test those for accuracy. Not only do they do it for many businesses within Minnesota, but we provide services to several, I think, six other states. There's 600 businesses in Minnesota that take advantage of the services that we can offer there. So it's a pretty significant program for the department. This department has had to do a little bit more in the last year in the way of testing based on new fuel products like E85 has created some new issues in testing and how we carry about our testing and specialized equipment. So this is an area that is expanding, or it's not expanding, but it's their mission is expanding as we get into these alternative energy sources.
And Mr. Monkowitz, given that and the proposal to expand the number of V85 pumps considerably, I'm kind of surprised that apparently expecting to do that with the same staff and the same budget that you have currently.
Mr. Chair, yes, we do. We feel that we have adequate staff. We know that we're going to need to purchase some additional equipment, but we believe that we have the resources necessary to do that. A couple years ago, there was legislation passed that moved the funding from the general fund to a special revenue dedicated source for the Weights and Measures program. Historically, it was mostly funded in general fund dollars. We were getting 25 cents of a dollar surcharge on every 1,000 gallons of gas that are sold in the state to carry on part of the mission of the Department of Weights and Measures. But we moved that 2 years ago. Now we get 81 cents on every dollar that's collected for this fee, and we believe that there's adequate resources in that special revenue fund to cover the costs of the increases.
Thank you, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Monkowitz, I always had a hard time with that name. But anyway, does the department actually check the integrity of E85 as far as fuel is concerned, or they just check the pumps to make sure it's pumping right? The amount that you pay for is what you get.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, I believe the answer is both. And I'll look back to... He's not here?
He's over there.
Mr. Mark Buccelli. Mark, is that an accurate, if I say yes to both, aren't we doing both of those?
Correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Buccelli says correct, yes.
You do twice as much as I thought.
At least.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, on the issue of V85 or the different pumps, there's another issue that's come forward, and maybe you're familiar with it, or somebody in the audience is more familiar with it, but it's called blending pumps that would allow a 20 or 30 or 40 or 50% blend to be chosen by the customer and then distributed. We currently have state laws that at least hinder that from happening, but there's a bigger issue with EPA, but I've got a bill coming forward to help fix that problem so we can sell other blends in the state. But are you dealing with that at all and trying to... I know with the governor's initiative of going to E20, we already have to request a waiver for E20 to be sold. So is the department working actively to try to get more blends of fuel sold?
Mr. Mountain.
Mr. Chair, I'll look to Mark Buccelli, the Director of Waste and Measures, to tackle that one.
Mr. Representative, Mark Buccelli, Director of Weights and Measures. The issue of been in the last year or so, there's been a lot of questions about the expansion from E10 to E20, E30, E40, all the way up to E85. Currently, we have about 220 E85 dispensers in the state right now. Obviously, if you're not aware of it, other than unleaded or premium, all your fuel has at least 10% ethanol in it. The question, again, has come up about the other blends. Our position at Weights and Measures is there is no ASTM specs for E20, E30, and so on. There's ASTM specs for E10 and E85. We cannot do any testing of those other blends because there is no ASTM specs.
Chair,
Representative West.
So the department's doing nothing about it? I mean, trying to advance? Because we're going to try to go to E20 by 2013.
Right.
There at least has to be waivers requested. You're doing nothing in this current... Currently today?
Ms. Chairman.
Garvey.
Ms. Chairman, Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner for Energy and Telecommunications at the
Minnesota Department of Commerce. The administration is working on expanding the availability of E85 and ethanol distribution through our state through more pumps, through development of more flex-fuel vehicles, and the development of additional ethanol-generating facilities. What Representative Westrom is referring to specifically is what it takes to move to the E20 mandate that the legislature passed and the governor signed into law several years ago. It requires the state to pursue a waiver from the US EPA to allow for more than 10% ethanol to be blended into regular gasoline. We are working with the PCA, the Pollution Control Agency, is the lead agency on that for the administration, working with the Department of Commerce and the Department of Agriculture. Where that sits right now is that there is an ongoing drivability test. That is basically the testing of the driving of a fuel with E20 in it with the University of Minnesota fleet. There is simultaneously at the State University of Minnesota Mankato laboratories doing an engine and metallurgical test to make sure that the E20 blend can work well within engines. These tests have to be done because this waiver that we are going to be seeking from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is a nationwide waiver. It has to be applicable across the country, and it has to be applicable to all types of vehicles that are driven in the country. We are on track to formally request that waiver, if my memory serves, towards the second half of this year, because we need to basically go through four seasons of both the drivability and then a series of tests. But so the waiver question is being worked on and being worked on very, very vigorously. This other question, the triggering question that Representative Westrom talked about was the pump blending devices. And as Director Pizzelli talked about, there are some substantive issues that we need to think through on that. But it is one of those kinds of issues that I think is well worth working with you, Representative Westrom, and any other members who want to bring those kinds of ideas out there, because we certainly want to encourage the use of fuels different than petroleum-based fuels in the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to belabor this anymore, but it raises the issue. I do have a bill that's perhaps we could talk about, Mr. Chairman, but with the department, but it's an issue that is, I think, up and coming, but right now it's illegal to put in blending pumps and sell blended fuel to consumers other than E10 or E85, and so we've got some work to do as a state to make that happen, but also to work with the federal delegation to make that happen. And we'll talk more about it, but Mr. Chair, hopefully we can work on that issue as well.
Certainly we can, Representative Westrom and Representative Welty, and I. We're about halfway through the time allotted to the committee, and we want to get to Mr. Garvey and the energy issues specifically. So let's try to keep the questions and the answers as brief as possible, and we'll try to get through the entire agenda. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Garvey, I'm just wondering, with the studies that are going on at the University of Minnesota and then also at Mankato, are they looking at various blends of ethanol with fuel, or are they just looking at the 20%, since the 20% is what we're seeking in our legislation that was passed in 2005?
Mr. Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wolf.
My belief is that they are looking at a range of fuel blends, but the dominant fuel blend is the E20, and then the off E20s are really designed to basically provide positives and negatives to proving of the E20 goal point. But Mr. Chairman, I would like to give that answer subject to checking with the experts over at the PCA who are actually running the test, and we'll get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, then I just have one last slide. The weight measures expenditures by fund, and theirs is again straightforward. It's all funded out of that special revenue account that I talked about, and they have 33 FTEs. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll move to the change items. The first change item that I'll talk about is a compensation adjustment that the governor built into agencies' budgets. The governor is seeking a 2% compensation increase to the agency's base for payroll-related compensation, insurance costs, et cetera. That amounts to about just under, just over $1 million for the department. Again, we have the ability to recover the majority of those costs through our assessment processes. And you can see there's a chart there below that would list what the 2% means for each division in the department. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would turn it over then to Deputy Commissioner Pat Nelson to discuss his change item, and then we'll go to Kevin Murphy and then Ed with Ed Garvey. So.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Commissioner Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Patrick Nelson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Commerce in the Market Assurance Division. In the interest of time, and so that you want to get to my colleague, Mr. Garvey, I can be brief. I only have the one slide. It's a pretty straightforward change item. The Market Assurance Division is asking for seven new FTE investigators. We're going to break it down into two subject areas. One is we're going to call it a senior team, which would be about four FTEs. And as you all know, and it's been well written, documented, in fact, there was an article in the paper this morning about the demographic wave that is starting now and will be with us for a while, relating to seniors. And also, they have a significant amount of resources. I just pulled some data this morning from the mutual fund industry. There's over $10 trillion invested in mutual funds as of last month. They also are going to pass a significant amount of resources back to their folks. So there's going to be a lot of seniors, and they have significant resources. And so that's where financial crooks like to ply their trade. So we are trying to put together a multidisciplinary team to look at that, sort of try and get ahead of some of this. And that's what this recommendation is. The other part of this recommendation is three FTEs related to my real estate team, which currently is six with one supervisor. This is another area where you've probably read we've had a growth in business. We see the growth in business continuing. For example, some of the things you've been reading about option arms, that mortgages that trigger, and we expect some of that to come to fruition over the next couple of years with housing prices fairly flat. Used to be they could grow out of some of this stuff. I don't think that'll occur. So we see a demand increase on our services in the real estate area. To fund these seven new positions, we estimate or asking for $600,000. We're going to replace that general fund money by increasing the cap on the mutual fund fees. They're currently capped at $25 million. We collect 1/20 of 1%. Of mutual funds filed for sale in Minnesota. Currently, I think that's running about $32 million as of last fiscal year. We would take the cap up from 25 to 25,600,000 to cover the cost of these new employees. With that, I'll stand for questions.
Questions, members?
We will get into all of these budget items in greater detail as we start to work through the budget. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's the same kind of question I asked before. How much of this is overlapped with the Attorney General's office, who has an initiative pretty much on the same thing, I believe? And the easy question first, did you say 7 full-time equivalents or 17?
Commissioner Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I have 7.
7.
Excuse me. And the two areas that we're talking about, the Commerce Department has principal jurisdiction. So we overlap some with the Attorney General's office. They have their Consumer Protection Division, and we have more, which is, I think, broad authority, and we have more targeted authority in some of these financial services areas.
All right, thank you.
Representative Gunther, did you have a question?
That was, yes, Mr. Chairman, that was $10 trillion in the United States seniors are worth.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, that was what is in mutual funds right now. That isn't all seniors. That's the total amount in the United States as reported to the Investment Company Institute, which tracks fund flows in and out of mutual funds.
Thank you.
No other questions? Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Deputy Commissioner Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, committee members, Kevin Murphy, Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Examinations Division. My people regulate banks, credit unions, finance companies, check cashers, and we also do the licensing of mortgage originators under Chapter 58. You've probably all read news articles about problems, fraud, other matters in the mortgage arena. We have an initiative to intensify regulation of that industry, including one of them that's in front of you here, where we're proposing to examine mortgage companies, like we do banks and credit unions, and also charge for those examinations. So we propose to hire 3 new examiners, and we would bill the mortgage companies for those examinations. We also licensed, among other things, credit service organizations. These are entities which try to help people repair their credit ratings. Currently, we charge them an annual fee of $100. We spend probably a day reviewing each of those proposals, so we're proposing to increase that fee to more cover the costs that we spend on these. So those are our 2 change items.
Commissioner, you license these entities currently, correct?
Pardon me, sir?
The department licenses these entities that you want to increase the oversight on. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Couldn't some of what needs to be done to eliminate fraud be accomplished by a stricter licensing procedure and examination in the first place?
Mr. Chairman, excellent question. I could talk about that for days, so try to narrow it.
Maybe another time.
It seems like it's way too easy to get into that business currently. We're going to propose net worth requirements for mortgage licensees and or coupled with a surety bond. We're going to propose to make mortgage fraud a specific crime in Minnesota. We're going to require mandatory training for loan officers in Minnesota. And we're going to also couple that with our authority to examine these entities going forward.
There are other questions, members? Commissioner, we look forward to discussing this in greater depth at a future time when we get into the budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Commissioner Garvey. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. Dennis Lundquist gave you a quick overview of the department and my division's general funding issues, and I'd be happy to answer some specific questions you have on that if you have them. But for purposes of time, I'll quickly jump to the governor's budget that he announced and the ramifications it has on the Department of Commerce's Energy Division. As I've already briefed the commission, committee, on December 12th, the governor announced his Next Generation Energy Initiative. It had three dominant parts: more renewables, more efficiency, and less carbon. There are pieces of that that are in policy form, and that will be introduced into the House of Representatives and hopefully sponsored by Chairman Hilty and a number of you. There are also a number of pieces of the governor's initiatives that are financial in nature. And with the governor's announcement of his budget this morning, I'm now at liberty to speak about them and hope that you will review them favorably. The first change item is a one-time allocation of $12 million to the Department of Commerce, to my division, for E85 pump grants. These grants would be issued primarily, if not entirely, by the American Lung Association, and any that we have worked very, very closely with in the last several years, very, very successfully, and has been very, very adept at encouraging and promoting and assisting gas stations around the state to install E85 pumps. Frequently, though, these installations have price tags to them, and to encourage them, to help them overcome that hindrance, we have given them money to help them with those costs. Generally, those costs to a gas station will run from anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 up to $45,000 to $50,000. Not a lot, but a lot. We've generally given them money so that they can get a grant for approximately one quarter to one third of those kinds of expenses. The $12 million would go to the department for those kinds of grants with the goal of quintupling the number of E85 gas serving outlets that we have in the state of Minnesota to approximately 1,800. That's about half of all the gas stations in the state of Minnesota. That's at least the amount that we think that you need to have in order for the people of Minnesota to sort of say that it is now very easy, very convenient for me to use E85 in my flex fuel vehicle. And then until you make it available, that's a barrier to the consumer to use. And so part of the governor's initiative is E85 everywhere, and to get E85 everywhere is to get gas stations to install 85 pumps, and one of the ways to do that is to give them grants for about one-third of the cost of their conversion or installation of a pump. That's the
Commissioner Garvey, before you go further, where does the $12 million come from?
At the general fund, one-time general fund appropriations.
And Mr. Garvey, we're talking about increasing the number of E85 pumps in the state by about 1,500, if the goal is 1,800,
right,
and there are 300 already existing. So the 300 already existing,
Did they get any kind of aid in establishing those pumps, or is this another instance in which if you do what we want you to do first, you don't get any help, but if you don't do what we want you to do, then you do?
Mr. Chairman, that's of course not the way this government works.
How does it work?
No, we provide incentives to people to do the right thing throughout the entire program. In fact, I would hazard a guess that 100% of the 300 have received some form of grant. And in fact, this is one of those barriers that we've identified for more stations to put in the 85. So, well, I can't say 100% of them. I do believe that a majority of them did, and I will double-check that information to confirm that number is right, that most of these entities have received some form of grants. And in fact, the interesting thing about that is that we've had instances where if you were within 5 miles of another gas station, or is it 1 mile? 1 mile, 5 miles. Well, it's either 1 mile or 5 miles. If you're a gas station within 5 miles or 1 mile, I'm not sure what the rate is, you couldn't get another grant because we actually didn't want to sort of build up competitive pressures on that. As we get D85s in everywhere, we're going to need to sort of relook at that kind of thing because we didn't want them to invest. They're still investing 3/4 of the money, and you don't want to basically sort of have a competitor down the street also and have a competition that way. So you were mindful of those competitive marketplace issues.
And one other question, I have the math right. So if we're talking about 1,500 pumps and $12 million, it would work out to $8,000 per pump. So why wouldn't we want to just do that rather than try to make the grant proportional to the cost? I mean, and why is there such a big range in cost?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are lots of factors that go into this. One factor is what are your tanks, underground tanks? How many do you have in it? It might be just possible for a gas station just to take one of their tanks and dedicate it to E85 and run it through a regular pump, and all they then have to do is make some minor reconfigurations to the pumps and nozzles. Very inexpensive kind of thing. Another one, they may need to install a tank. They may need to also install a distribution pump. And they may need to install it in a different location since they're under some kind of arrangement where they can't put it under their canopy. And so all of a sudden it turns from a very minor expense in one setting to a much bigger deal. And so our attitude is if you make it a one-size-fits-all grant, big winner on one hand, not so big a winner on another. And so our goal is to work with the individual gas stations and find it and try to put a price where we give a grant to approximately a quarter to a third of their actual cost of conversion installation.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I'm glad we're getting into the numbers here. This will be about at a third of the stations statewide. Is that what your number is?
About half, Commissioner Garland.
About half of the stations statewide. How many cars right now take E85?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Guinness, our estimation is slightly over 100,000 cars, and that, of course, goes up dramatically. It's going up every day as people buy more and more flex fuel vehicles.
Representative Guinness.
If it's 100,000, out of what? I mean, what number is this? Out of a million cars, out of 2 million cars, out of...
I don't know that. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Thank you, Ellen. Mr. Chairman, I don't know that, but I do the sort of back of the envelope, and, you know, we have 5.5 million people in the state. You know, let's say 2/3 of them have vehicles. I mean, you're several million vehicles in the state of Minnesota that are registered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wiggins.
I think these numbers would be helpful for us to have so we know, because we're going to have half the stations, but it's only going to be maybe not even a tenth or a twentieth of, or less than that, maybe a 5% of the, help me with my math here, but maybe 5% of the cars, but half the stations?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiggins, to some extent, as I sort of indicated in responding to the E10, we need to push this policy along three simultaneous fronts. You need to make E85 more available to the people of Minnesota so that they sort of, when they go and buy a vehicle, they sort of say, I can buy a vehicle and I know I can get it gassed up for what I want it to be gassed up for. That's sort of the chicken and egg. And then the third part of the policy push is to make produce more ethanol in general, so that as you push it more of into the marketplace, it's more and more available and it stays priced competitively. I mean, so you have to push all three of those things. If you don't push on one at the expense of the other, this policy will fail.
And also, Representative Wiggins, I think if we want to get the figures, we have to ask both how many vehicles are currently using E85 and how many vehicles that are sold are capable of using E85, and also what are we projecting that going forward, what are automakers' plans in that regard? Did you have a follow-up, Representative?
I did have a follow-up, but your question is actually better than mine. That is a question that we need to answer. And I understand what you're saying about chicken and the egg, because that's how we did recycling. You had to provide the opportunity, and there weren't the markets, and we kept going. But this feels like a pretty big chicken and a very small egg to me.
I don't think that was an accusation, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I've certainly been called a lot worse. Mr. Chairman, there is in your packet, on page 27, there is a quick bar graph that sort of shows the linkage between the E85 and the pumps and the usage. You can
Commissioner, I don't think we have that in the packets. I have that here somewhere, printed off the finance Department of Finance website, but I don't think we actually have that in the packet.
Alright. That's pretty cool.
Miracle of modern technology, and there it is on the screen numbers.
The bar graphs are the station growth, and this is through 2005, and we saw a significant growth in number of stations. But you see, this is the volume of E85 gas usage. I mean, the linkage between E85 availability and E85 usage is very, very strong and important, which is one of the reasons why I need both to pursue the chicken and the egg, as well as the whole cage of additional E85 and ethanol production. So,
thank you.
Thank you, man.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think at the risk of scrambling the eggs, I think where Representative Welty went to college, they are trying to develop kits to convert cars into being able to use E85. Mm-hmm. And I think they're very close, and I think that would be a relatively inexpensive way to convert any car into an E85 car.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the first, the hottest point I was going to make, you very ably made, that we're trying to incentivize this rush to E85 by like 20% by 2013, and part of it is finding more stations. But since that's already been discussed, let me go back to my original question about that I think somebody deflected to Mr. Garvey about the AG's office looking out for the interests of the public and the Department of Commerce looking out for the interests of the public. Now, I did get a private note from counsel, but in the interest of educating the whole committee, let's ask Commissioner Garvey for his explanation, and I'll compare it to the attorney's explanation, and maybe we'll grade him.
Commissioner, would you like to see the notes first?
Can I please be the chicken now, sir? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Dirk. The Attorney General's office has a specific set of statutory responsibilities as well as public policy roles that in many respects is focused on the residential and small utility user, small commercial users. In fact, we refer to them in the party before the Public Utilities Commission as RUD, Residential Utility Division, that their focus is residential. The Department of Commerce has a responsibility to residential consumers, but also the commercial and industrial and the utility in general. And that, so when we think of the public, we think that we have a much more comprehensive, broader portfolio of obligations that we have to, we also intervene in every single case of every docket before the Public Utilities Commission, while the Attorney General's office will intervene only when they feel an issue is specifically focusing on the residents or the small utility user.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Beard, how did that compare to the note?
I don't think I came out too well, actually. I knew the difference, but I wasn't sure who was in what box, because my contact with the residential utility unit goes back about 20 years. And weren't they at some point over there? That could move, or my mistake?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it is my understanding that the Attorney General's office, as a the constitutionally dedicated statewide elected office, has the ability to form whatever divisions that they want and staff them and want and have a role to represent whoever they want at the Public Utilities Commission. They've chosen to focus on the residents and small business consumers. And so as long as I've been in this business, that's been their focus, and that's what they've been most attuned to. And they play a very important role. I don't want to. There is that overlap, and we pay attention. And in many instances, they pick up things that we don't pay attention to, or looking at it from a different. We say that's a great point. Sometimes we agree with them. Sometimes we don't agree. But these are all valuable perspectives.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman,
move on to next item.
The third component of the budget items that go through. Before I go to the third specific one that comes through my division of the governor's budget, let me also sort of point out that the governor does have a cellulosic ethanol and biogasification portion of his budget that will be running through the Department of Agriculture that is designed to promote that, what I was characterizing as the hen house, basically promotion of ethanol and biogasification. And so I just wanted to say that even though that's not coming through my division or becoming before this committee directly, a portion of that certainly is in the governor's Next Generation Energy Initiative.
Thank you, Commissioner. We do have a couple of questions before we move on. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for not being here, but I came in at an opportune time, something that piqued my interest. And thank you for allowing me to ask the question at this time. First of all, I had a Dodge Caravan 2001 that burnt E85, and I did that consistently. When it had over 200,000 miles on it, I traded it off for a 2006 Dodge Caravan that is not E85 compatible. And so we've made a big protest to the Chrysler Corporation. If I wanted to have an E85 compatible, I'd then have to go to a Lincoln Navigator and a few others of that type of class, and or a Ford F-350 truck. But in my travels around and interest in burning E85, in Watertown, South Dakota, even though they don't have the same type of subsidy program that we do there or incentive program, they do have many of their pumps have the right for me to choose what blend I wanted of E85. And I don't know if that question has been asked before, but if it was asked before, I apologize.
Blend of ethanol.
Blend of ethanol. And if it was asked before, I withdraw my question.
It was asked before we had the...
I won't waste your time.
Do you want to talk to Representative Westrom about that? He has a bill. And
I got the bill. If you want to carry up, that'd be great.
I apologize, Representative Beard. Did we miss the follow-up?
We did, got it. All covered.
All right. Commissioner Garvey.
All right. Two other items that are specifically coming through my division from the governor's budget announcement as part of his Next Generation Energy Plan. And that is his 25 by 25 grants program. As you may remember, a key component of the governor's Next Generation Energy Initiative is that all of our energy should come from 25% renewables by the year 2025. And part of our initiative is part of the expand the REO to do that. But in this setting, part of what we want to do is allocate $2.5 million each of the next 2 years of the next biennium to what we're calling 25 by 25 grants. Specifically, there would be about $500,000 for methane digester development, $500,000 to continue the state's award-winning solar rebate program, $500,000 for continued funding of community energy technical assistance and outreach programs. These are the clean energy resource teams, CERTs. If you're familiar with them from around the state, they're regional in nature, and they pull folks together, both experts and citizens, and that money dried up, and we want to, and we've been trying to sort of keeping them going on a shoestring, but now we want to more formally and significantly fund them. And then $1 million in each of the years for technical analysis and demonstration funding for automotive technology projects, specifically the plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. And those kinds of projects would come out of the 25 by 25 grants, that $2.5 million or $5 million for the biennium proposal. This money would, under the governor's budget, would require a transfer of funds from the Renewable Development Fund to the Department of Commerce for these grants.
Commissioner, well, I don't think we can get into as much detail as many of us would like in the time that we have remaining, but my understanding currently is that the Renewable Development Fund is about $16 million. Is that per biennium, or is that per year?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
And is that figure correct?
Each year, under the 2003 Prairie Island legislation, Xcel Energy has to contribute, account for $16 million to the Renewable Development Fund. It now, because of a staggering in outlays of its funds, and including the amounts from the 2007, it has about $29 million in it. That's on a per-year basis. So 29 this year and then another 16 next year. And what the governor is suggesting is that we take about 7.5 of that for this program and the program I'm about to speak about.
And so, Commissioner, you would not anticipate any of these programs to be ongoing? Or how are they? How do we anticipate paying for them in the future?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this would be a one-time grant from the Renewable Development Fund to the Department of Commerce for these purposes. Ongoing out-year funding will have to be figured out in due course.
Question, Representative Kalin.
I think thank you, Mr. Chair. Staying at the umbrella view, not so much focusing on the hen house and the coop, but maybe the whole farm here. Looking just quickly at other states that have aggressive renewable portfolio standards, Illinois, Montana, New York, Nevada, curiously, Montana actually has our exact interim standard of 15% by 2015. How do they compare in terms of level of funding that the governor's proposed with other states, but also looking at bringing in another farm animal here, the cash cow piece here of where 25% of the department's general fund is coming back to the department, the rest of it's going into other programs. I have a follow-up back here. Can you just talk about how we compare to other states that are taking this aggressive energy perspective as well? Commissioner, thanks.
Commissioner Garvin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Kalin, I can give you more specific detailed information on what other states are doing. Many other states have, we'll say, programs or we'll say funds that have larger dollar numbers attached to them, but they've generally been system benefits charges or wires charges or deals that have been arranged in a retail choice setting where it was a negotiated arrangement. We don't have that. What we have here is a set of policies, a set of state and private funding arrangements that we put together to move forward on these programs. But I can give you more specific, because there are those kinds of sources that I can give you and tell you what these other funds are looking like. But I can't give you a dollar-for-dollar amount. As far as the budget overall, the Department of Commerce does raise more money than we spend. That money goes into the general fund, and the policymakers, elected officials, decide to allocate that money as they do. It's factored into the part of the budget. It's not a sort of a surprise cash recovery that all of a sudden we got this money from unclaimed property. Now what do we do with it?
And follow up, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and commissioners. I couldn't resist the opportunity to bring in the farm animal, but I do think it raises a little bit of a question that if we can make some aggressive investments in conservation, especially where they can, where we can make the money back in savings even within the 2-year biennium. Let's say we were to use a couple $1 million of investment that would save just in state buildings $10 million. It seems like that might be an appropriate place for us to begin and say, you know, we might want to use a little bit more of the department's revenue coming in to save money across the board in other areas. And I hope that that's part of our conversation going forward. And I understand that the governor's package does put a good emphasis on conservation. I hope that we can talk more about it as we go on. Thanks, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, on that point,
Commissioner Garvin.
We do spend, Minnesota ratepayers do spend $100 million a year on energy efficiency and conservation. What I was referring to specifically was funds for renewable energy development. When you bring in energy conservation, I'm much more specific on that. We have one of the strongest, most well-funded energy conservation programs. And we hope to do more, and I hope to be able to bring to you with the governor's legislation a very vigorous dialogue on that topic.
One more quick point, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin, we have 3 minutes left, and Mr. Garvey has one more point to make. So, very briefly.
Very briefly. Just the point that we can, if we're through conservation, reducing the overall projected growth in energy, it's easier to meet our targets with renewable energy. It requires less generation. So they are closely tied, and I appreciate your thoughts, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, the third element that comes through the vision from the governor's budget as part of his next generation energy initiative is the next gen energy research funding. He's proposing $10 million, $5 million per year of the biennium to fund, we'll call it basic and applied renewable energy research in the form of grants that would be primarily devoted to our research and educational centers, University of Minnesota, MINSCU, AURI, the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, and any other institution or place that does renewable energy research would be eligible for receipt of those grants. The University of Minnesota's IRE initiative, Institute for Renewable Energy and the Environment, is an example of a place that may receive these funds. We do think that sort of doing basic and applied research is important. Giving grants that we're doing here, doing grants for the solar and CERTs and methane digest and the plug-in hybrids, and then also doing money for cellulosic and biogasification, is very much in the state's public interest. We'll have dividends today and far into the future. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my budget presentation, and I hope it was satisfactory.
Thank you, Commissioner. One question I have about the grant program is, how did you arrive at this number, the $10 million?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, $10 million is approximately half of what the University of Minnesota IRE received under the 2003 Prairie Island legislation. They received a single $10 million grant from the Renewable Development Fund, and then $2 million over 5 years for continuing funding. We concluded that we wanted to continue that kind of research. We wanted to have other entities have the opportunity to get funding. We looked at it and said $10 million would do the trick.
Questions from members? Representative Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, the first part of my question was your question. How was the $10 million arrived at? But the second part of the question is, how do we know that's enough? That seems to me, given the significance of research in the energy picture and the short range of time we have to address some of the crucial issues ahead of us, I'm skeptical about whether that's a sufficient investment in the research arena. So that's my question. How do we know that's enough?
Commissioner?
I have, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move a little into, I have 500 megabits, about 220 U2 songs on my iPod. Nearly every U2 song in the data. Of those songs, there are probably 25 that I really, really like, and I'll play all the time. But they had to sing those 220 songs. So you're right, Representative, that we have to do a lot of work on research to get the hit song, the song that you like. Having said that, if it's not U2, you got to make sure you're spending your money wisely and you have limited resources. And so what we tried to do was identify a level where We can fund the research institutes that we have in the state, encourage them in the right direction, and hope that they sing some great songs at the end. But at the end of the day, you know, your question is a very important one, but you have to bound it somewhere. So I'm sorry I sort of waxed a little tangential on that one. But
well, I wondered there for a moment where we were going, but glad you brought that to a safe landing, Commissioner. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the Commissioner. Commissioner Garvey and maybe even Representative Westrom can help me answer this question, but IREE receives funding from, I believe, the Renewable Energy or the Energy Development Fund from Xcel Energy and also some SIP funding. It's either a combination or it's just one or the other. Of that $10 million, would any of this $10 million going to IREE in the past? So essentially now they're having to apply for these grants, and we're talking about funds that were already used for this initiative. So are we actually adding new money into this, or are we just reallocating who can be eligible for this?
Commissioner Garvey.
The 2003 legislation, Mr. Chairman, the 2003 legislation directed a single lump sum of $10 million from the Renewable Development Fund to IRE. It then added a continuing obligation on Xcel to fund IRE for $2 million for the subsequent 5 years from SIP. That $10 million and that subsequent SIP spending is now running to its end. And the lump sum is gone. Some of it has been put in the grant, some of it bearing the fruits of it. The $2 million is running out because the fifth year is coming up, I think, next year. So this is a way to continue the good work that IRE and MNSCU, but it's also expanding the opportunities.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. So, Commissioner Garvey, are we talking about an initial lump sum of $10 million and then there was another $10 million from the SIP program that all went to IRE?
Correct.
So this $10 million that we're talking about right now for the governor's initiative isn't really new money, new research going on into the next biennium, because we're going to have IREE, MNSCU, the University of Minnesota, AURI, and others all applying for the $10 million that was there before. Am I correct, or are there new dollars that I'm not seeing right here? I'm just trying to get that clarification.
This is new money. The $10 million was a check from Xcel was more or less delivered to Xcel in July of 2003. Subsequent checks from SIP has been paid to IREE each of the following 5 years. And the last check is due, I think, next year. So what we're trying to do here is give them an opportunity. So they've spent their $20 million, and now they have an opportunity to basically continue that. But also so does MNSCU, and so does AURI. So we view this as a continuation.
Representative Welty.
Okay. Well, thank you, Commissioner Garvey. You answered my question. So we're actually having a continuation, and now we're having more entities that are going to be applying for that continuation of funds that was just going to one entity in the past. Am I correct on that? I'm just getting clarification on this. So when we're talking about the budget in the future and we're talking about investments in renewable energy, we know how much we're actually investing above and beyond what we've invested over the past in the past venues.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's more or less a way to say it. What the governor has proposed is to put $10 million towards renewable energy research grants that our institutions of higher learning can apply for. The University of Minnesota's IRE is one of those institutes. It's a deserving one, but so is MNSCU, so is IURI, and so are some of the others.
Thank you, Commissioner. We're out of time, in fact, past time. We look forward to continuing this discussion in the future, and I'm sure we will. Meeting's adjourned.